Before I start my homily, I just wanted to say thank you. I'm a veteran of almost 10 years in the Air Force a long, long time ago. And it's nice that people recognize the veterans and their service to this country and what they did. Because at the end of the Vietnam War, the veterans really were not that well welcomed. So it certainly feels good and warms my heart that that sentiment has changed. And so thank you. Now, our parable in the gospel story today of the 10 virgins, or you could call them bridesmaids, 5 were wise, 5 were foolish. Now, my understanding, this was the tradition that they would come out and meet the bridegroom before the wedding feast. So that's why they were doing this. And they're supposedly all virtuous women, you know, preparing to meet the bridegroom. Of course, the bridegroom is Jesus, and this is an eschatological story, which is an end-time story. So it's meeting the Lord on the last day. That's what this is all about. And there's a couple of parables. We had one about 4 weeks ago that, same thing, be prepared. Be prepared for when the Lord comes, because we don't know when he's going to come. The parable itself, to me, seems pretty straightforward. The 5 wise bridegrooms or virgins are prepared, and they're welcomed into the banquet. And the 5 that were foolish were not. When they returned, the door was locked. They couldn't get in. It was too late for them. Now, 2 things sort of stood out to me when I was preparing for this homily. I mean, I could have ended it right there. That's the parable, right? You're not prepared. You're not making it in. But these things stood out to me, and I wanted to go into a little more depth with them. Now, the one thing is what the wise ones said to the foolish ones. They said, go instead to the merchant and buy some for yourselves. Now, why would the wise ones not share with the foolish ones? I mean, isn't that the Christian thing to do? That we love one another, we care for each other, and we would share. That's the first thing that sort of stood out for me. Why would they say, you know, go to the merchant and buy some for yourselves? Now, the second thing that stood out for me was what Jesus said at the end of the parable. When the foolish ones came back and they were knocking on the doors, said, Lord, Lord, let us in. And I found this statement a little odd. I mean, Jesus says, amen, I say to you, I do not know you. Why these words? Why wouldn't he say, you're too late, go away, door's locked, you can't get in, I don't want you here, leave. But he didn't. He says, I do not know you. So I'm going to explore those a little bit. The first one was why the wise wouldn't share with the foolish virgins. Now, each one of us, we're on our own journey to God and to that end time, our judgment day. All of us have to face that at one time. Now, we are not forced to live our life in God's love. We all have free will to choose our path in life, whether we believe or not believe. If we didn't have a choice, we'd just be slaves. So it has to be a choice that each person makes on their own journey. I think a few weeks ago, the gospel story of the greatest commandment that Jesus said is when he was asked by the Pharisees, trying to trick him into what he would say in response to their questions, says, which is the greatest commandment? And Jesus said, you shall love your Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. And the second one is similar to that, and you will love your neighbor as yourself. Now, Jesus really simplified what we have to do. Love God and share that love with others. Made it real simple. But it's really difficult to do all the time. It requires vigilance on our part to do that. Think about what that really means. Because what he's saying is, if you do those two things, that takes care of all the other commandments. The Ten Commandments, or the 613 rules that the Jewish faith had, takes care of all those if you do those two things. See, he knew what the Pharisees were trying to do. They were trying to trick him, but he didn't answer it the way they thought he would. And this, I'm going to tell you now, might shock you a little bit. But we cannot say or do anything to earn the love of God. Nothing. And likewise, we cannot do or say anything that will take that love of God for us away. Because God's love is freely given to all of us, all the time. It's a grace. Now, what we have to do is we have to open our hearts to that love. And in spiritual terms, we have this term called the false self. The false self is basically those programs for happiness that we develop in our transition from being youth to adults. And it's what we understand the world and what is good for us and what isn't good for us. But oftentimes that doesn't align with God's love. So we have to deprogram that false self, our programs for happiness, and open our heart up to God's love. Now, it doesn't make any difference how many prayers we say, how many rosaries we do, how many hours in adoration we have, how many times we come to Mass, how many times we do novenas or visit a holy place. If those actions are not converting our heart, they do nothing for us. Because that's all about opening your heart to God's love. All those prayers we say, coming to Mass, it's about changing who we are and aligning with this commandment that Jesus gave us, the greatest commandment. Love your God with all your soul, all your being, and who you are, and your neighbor as yourself. Now, if we fall away from God, which all of us, I'm sure, have done that. I certainly have. And I think that's part of our human condition, because we think we know better than God. And we follow that path which actually takes us away from God. Now, there's no better example in our scriptures than what we hear the parable in Luke of the prodigal son. Now, if you've never read the book by Henry Nouwen, who's a priest, called Return of the Prodigal Son, it's a good read because it goes into detailed analysis of that parable. It's a wonderful read. I would highly recommend it. But the prodigal son story is about the father had two sons, and the youngest one wanted his inheritance, and the father gave it to him. And he went off and squandered his inheritance on a life of dissipation, parties, women, drink, whatever his heart wanted. He just did that. And he had a bunch of friends going with him, and they were happy spending his money, all of his inheritance, until it ran out. And he was destitute. And then all those friends disappeared. And then a famine came. And he wasn't getting enough to eat. So he took a job on a pig farm, slopping pigs, which in the Jewish faith, I'm sure that would be the final insult to any father. He would just disown his son at that point because pigs are unclean. Touching a pig is unclean, makes you unclean and unworthy to be in the presence of God. So he finally decided to go home to his father, to come back to God. And he just wanted to be a worker in the field. But as soon as his father caught sight of him, he threw him a party. He said, "My son was dead, he has come back to life. He was lost, he's now found." He brought him back to exactly where he was. He didn't destroy that love that God has for each one of us. Now, if that was anything was going to do it, what he did, I'm sure, would do that. Probably most people would just disown him at that point. But God doesn't disown us. He's always there calling us home, calling us back to the path to him.